The views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of this station, JVC Broadcasting Management, or its sponsors.
Welcome, everyone. I am your host, Priscilla Arena. Thanks for joining us today on A Woman's View, where we will be bringing you a unique and fresh perspective on current events, business, politics, education, and lifestyle from a woman's view. Joining us today is Felicia Fleitman, founder of Savvy Hires and co-executive director of Recruit Long Island. She's also the 2017 award winner of Innovator of the Year from InnovateLongIsland.com and winner of ZipRecruiter Small Business Awards in Technology and Innovation. Welcome, Felicia.
Thanks, Priscilla. Excited to be here.
I am super excited to get into this discussion. I think it's a nice and meaty discussion, and it affects so many of us here on Long Island. I'm having you here today to talk about the employment on Long Island and what applicants should be doing and looking for and what is on the horizon. So tell us a little bit about your background and your expertise and how you can help everybody.
Absolutely. So just to give you some background, I have close to 15 years of experience in the talent acquisition function within businesses. I started my career working in global law firms where my responsibility was to create and run summer associate programs for the purposes of pipeline hiring. I basically had the coolest job ever. My job was to create relationships with top law schools in the country, get law students to come and spend the summer with us, and then we developed an extensive and strategic internship program focused on three things: education, so educating the summer associates on what our firm did; integration, so integrating them into company culture; and evaluation, evaluating them on their work product and cultural fit to determine if we wanted to hire them long term. And while it was quite an investment from the firm up front, it saved us a ton of money in long-term hiring costs. We actually hired 90% of our attorneys directly from that summer associate program.
That's a high percentage.
It was incredible. It was extremely effective. We had an opportunity to try before you buy. We got great talent. We created loyalty. It was absolutely fantastic. I did that at two different firms for about 6.5 years. And then I moved on to the staffing side of recruiting. So I joined a high growth executive staffing agency where we focused on food and beverage brands. So I worked with awesome brands like Vita Coco, Red Bull, Kind Bar, Saint Germain, Bacardi, LeBlanc, and I placed out all their C-level teams. There was a time where I could walk into Whole Foods and I knew the executive teams of every major brand on the shelf. It was a really cool job. I had an opportunity to really be very high touch. And what was cool about that opportunity is we worked hand in hand with our clients. So I actually presented at some of my clients' board meetings on what their long-term talent acquisition strategy should be. And we worked directly with them to make sure we understood the cultural fit. It was a really high-touch experience. I rounded out my experience as the director of recruiting at NTT Data, the sixth largest IT firm in the world. And then I launched Savvy Hires about a year ago. And Savvy Hires launched with the pure mission of helping corporations develop strategic internship programs for pipeline hiring purposes.
We're going to get into that a little bit more because I think it's a very unique and fresh way for employers to be looking at talent out there.
Absolutely. I completely agree. And so basically what I did was I looked at all my experience background and said, well, what did I think was the best way to do it, was the best way to attract and excite and onboard talent at each of my organizations. And then I made a company out of it.
There,
so it was really cool. And then since launching Savvy Hires, I'm actually part of the Launchpad community. I work out of Launchpad Westbury, and I'm at Launchpad Huntington quite a bit. And I met somebody named Jeff Gio. And Jeff actually has quite a political background. And we were talking one day about the issues that I saw in the Long Island market from a talent acquisition perspective and from a recruitment perspective, and why is it so hard for people to find jobs on Long Island, and why is it so hard for companies to find good talent? And he had answers for me that were political in nature and not talent acquisition in nature. And it was incredible when we saw the same issues but different ways to solve them. And so we developed a nonprofit called Recruit Long Island. It's www.recruitli.org, and our mission is to create workforce opportunity through a regional approach. Why there needs to be a Nassau County and a Suffolk County, I got to tell you, most people, if they're looking for a job, they don't care. They just want to know that they're not fighting traffic on the LIE.
Or having to take a train into Manhattan.
Exactly. Exactly. And, you know, for example, and I know we'll talk about this a little later, Priscilla, but Long Island is home to over 3,000 manufacturing companies on Long Island. 3,000. And yet, if you talk to most high school students, they have no idea that manufacturing even exists on Long Island. And their parents, who lived through the days of Grumman leaving Long Island, say, well, Grumman's gone, so manufacturing is dead. And that couldn't be farther from the truth.
No.
And so that's one of the main things that Recruit Long Island seeks to improve upon and just really create awareness, even at that high school level, of all the opportunities that are available to students, regardless of their education level and what their opportunities can be and what their earning potential could be. So those are some of the things we're doing. We're also going to be creating something called an off-island job fair. So basically, all of the students who we send off to college that are off of Long Island, we're going to do a big job fair and bring them all back and show them all of the companies that are hiring here.
I'm glad you brought that up because I've spoken to a few people in recent years. Being a part of a mentor-mentee sort of program. And one of the things that people want to address is the fact that usually people under the age of 30, almost 50% seem to be moving off Long Island, or they just don't see their future here.
Mm-hmm.
So my first big question to you is, what should graduates be thinking about in gaining career or employment? And what's different today, let's say, than it was, I'll gladly tell you, I'm 46. So when I got out of college, I literally, besides faxing my resume,
right,
I would go and knocking on doors, literally with my portfolio bag in hand, shoving my resume right in their faces. And unfortunately, you know, that does not work today. So we know that we have to apply during, you know, through computer or some kind
sure.
of technology. So let's talk about that. What should they be doing and thinking about?
Yeah, so first of all, just in terms of the differences, you've hit the nail on the head when it comes to technology. I actually spoke with a candidate who's in his 50s, and he had worked for the same company for 20 years. And he told me that when he entered the job market, he did what you said, which is if he wanted to work for a specific company, he went and he knocked on the door and he left his resume with the receptionist. And frankly, if somebody ever knocked on my door and handed me their resume, I'd almost be scared. Like, I'm not expecting you.
Exactly.
I'm not expecting that appointment.
Right.
So it really has been quite a shift with the emergence of technology and the emergence of job boards. So what do you do? So first of all, for every one open entry-level position, a company will get an average of 149 resumes. And for every one open experience position, a company will get an average of 89 resumes. That's huge. So how do you stand out? So the first thing is if you're an entry-level person, getting some type of experience is really important. So many times I see students who have had, you know, maybe what I call a Me Too job. They've maybe served tables or they've bartended. Those are great experiences. But when I look at a resume, I want to see that they've taken steps to gain exposure into the field that they think they may want to go into. And internships are a great way to figure out what you don't want to do. I happen to think that the entire way that we go to college is backwards. You know, we have high school students who have never stepped into an office environment, choosing a college based on a major they think they want to do, and that major will directly relate to whatever career. And yet, the only thing that they've been exposed to is what their parents do for a living. And that creates the socioeconomic divide that we see all the time, and that creates really a lack of opportunity and people realizing their full potential. And so the earlier that we can expose students to the different opportunities that are available, the better we are in terms of helping them get the experience they want and finding a job they truly love to do. Recruit Long Island just produced a video called Long Island in Manufacturing. It's on our website. And it profiles several women who are in the manufacturing industry and talking about how they got there. One is a salon owner. She was a hairdresser and she started cutting hair and then started to get into dye, those, you know, the dyes for coloring hair. Mm-hmm. And now she styles all these celebrities and has her own line of hair products. So you don't have to know. You don't have to know exactly what your path is going to be. You just have to go out, you have to try, and you have to experience.
I'm your host, Priscilla Arena, and we're sitting here talking with Felicia Fleitman from Savvy Hires, speaking about the employment climate here on the island and what candidates should be doing to gain willful employment here. I know you must have a million resume tips out there. Again, that's even changed. I've been schooled recently in changing my own resume. And I've also been told it really should just, you should have an updated resume on hand, even if you are in a particular job for 5 years, 10 years, whatever it is. Always keep that updated every couple of years, I would say, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Because here's the best thing about resumes. You want to make it as quantitative as possible. And so if you sit down to do your resume and you've been in your current job for 5 years, it's hard for you to remember all of your accomplishments and the metrics that are associated with that. So anytime that you do something that's really impactful at work that demonstrates your ability to do a good job, and especially from a quantitative perspective, just jot it down somewhere because you will pull on that. And yeah, I've got a ton of tips. As I mentioned to you earlier, for every experienced position, a company gets an average of 89 resumes because job boards and technology has made it easier than ever to apply. Mm-hmm. So how do you stand out? Well, the first thing that I suggest, have you ever heard of that newspaper term above the fold?
Yes.
And so for all of your listeners who may not know that, what that means is if you go to a newsstand, all of the newspapers will be folded with the top half facing up. And that's that's how you as a consumer choose to purchase whatever newspaper you're going to read based on what's above the fold, based on what speaks to you as a consumer. Well, the same thing exists for resumes. For most talent acquisition folks, they spend an average of 6 seconds per resume looking at your resume.
Only 6 seconds. 6 seconds to grab the attention of that employer.
Exactly.
Potential employer.
Exactly. So the first thing you want to do is think about the information that you want above the fold. If you were to fold your resume in half, what does the information above the fold say about
that
you?
That top half of that resume.
Exactly.
Even if that resume is 2 pages, which I want to ask you, how long should a resume be?
It depends at your level. If you are an executive level, or if you have over 10 years of experience and you want to put 2 pages of quantitative, real information in there, by all means, go ahead. Please don't give me 40 bullets of your one experience, though. That should be multiple experiences, any publications that you may have, any type of leadership roles you have in the community, things of that nature. If you have under 10 years experience, or if you are an entry level, 1 page. That's it. There's no reason to go on from there. And it's okay if you don't put every single thing on your resume. What I say to candidates all the time is think about your resume as the perfect outfit for the perfect occasion. I may have the most awesome pair of shoes, a great belt, a cute shirt, and an awesome hat. It doesn't mean that they all go together.
Correct.
So think about your resume as creating an outfit to go to that special occasion. I wouldn't wear stilettos to the gym. I wouldn't wear my gym clothes out to prime, for example.
Right.
So think about crafting that perfect resume. Obviously, you want to demonstrate, especially chronological order and things of that nature, but make sure it makes sense. Tell a story. You also want to think about keywords. This is the frustrating part of everything being online. A candidate has said to me it's almost like learning the material for the test as opposed to learning the material just in general.
Mm-hmm.
If you know you want a specific job in a specific field, I suggest you print out 5 job descriptions of similar jobs that all are of interest. Take a highlighter, I'll be a little old school there, and highlight all of the keywords that occur throughout those same job descriptions. Those are the keywords that you want on your resume above the fold, articulated in a quantitative way.
Excellent.
That's how you can get seen and found in those resumes.
I was going to say, one of the things for me that's a little bit frustrating if I was to go out and look for a job, someone of my age demographic, is that it everything is done through, you know, Monster or ZipRecruiter or whatever. And in the job description, it will give you what they're looking for in terms of qualifications for the candidates. Some of them may be looking for a master's degree. But if you have a bachelor's degree and let's say 5-10 years of experience of what they're looking for, should you apply anyway? And, you know, would the computer automatically sort of kick you off or put you at the bottom of the pile?
It depends.
Okay.
So first of all, really, and you hit something on the head, right? Will the computer knock you out? So large companies will have ATS, applicant tracking systems, where they will put in specific keywords that will determine whether or not your resume is flagged as one that an actual human should look at.
Hmm.
Or in some of the job boards, like a ZipRecruiter, for example, I can put specific keywords that I'm looking for that will preference some resumes over others. So if I say that an MBA is required, and I know that that is my top thing, you absolutely need an MBA, and you don't have an MBA, you're not going to get considered.
Mm-hmm.
But if an MBA is a nice to have and not a requirement, and I'm not putting, and I'm not telling the computer to flag resumes that only have an MBA, then yeah, you might be considered. So that is frustrating sometimes. How you get by that? So first of all, I never suggest that candidates only have one resume. Ever. I suggest you have two or three that either are different industries or different types of functions. And so make sure you're selecting the resume that works best for you. I don't suggest that you spend 20 minutes redoing every single resume before submitting an application. You might scream because most people feel like resumes go into a black hole. But to spend 3 or 4 minutes and tweak your resume for the specific position is really going to go a long way.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit about the positions right now that you see that are maybe saturated, okay, mm-hmm. where the supply and demand may be a little bit off. And also, what is on the horizon? What kinds of job descriptions do you see opening up in the future?
Okay, so you may have heard this term called STEM or STEAM. Mm-hmm. I feel like every single human being on the planet is talking about it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's certainly the case in our school systems. Even my daughter, who goes to daycare, essentially, she's 3, she can participate in an after-school STEM program.
Okay.
I mean, come on.
Yeah.
but what is STEM? Or STEAM. So STEM is science, technology, engineering, and math. STEAM is science, technology, engineering, arts, and math, which is essentially what you cover anyway in high school. But those are the burgeoning, the 21st century careers, if you will. So, you know, anybody who is really strong in engineering and math, not only are you doing computer science, which everybody seems to go towards nowadays, but think about how those skills relate to an actual trade. I think we're going to see a real emergence in trades moving forward. For example, most companies out on Long Island, manufacturing companies, have a dire need for something called a CNC technician. It's a super skilled trade within the manufacturing industry, and these people are so hard to find that companies are having a really hard time in recruiting people from other parts of the country to get CNC technicians here. And that's the same for several what I'd call middle skills or trade type of roles. We, I think, as a country have really moved away from that. We've mm-hmm. moved away from the trade organizations. We've moved away from manufacturing. And that's not the case. We have tons of opportunities here. If you are a candidate, you're good with your hands and maybe you're looking for a change of career, Suffolk Community College has amazing credit and non-credit classes that pipeline directly into specific roles. And you could be making $90,000 or $100,000 in some of these jobs.
Fantastic.
And they don't require 4-year degrees.
That's amazing. I mean, that's so good to know, because I know that there's limited options out there. If you don't have that $200,000+ degree.
And some organizations, like Nature's Bounty, for example, mm-hmm. you can join them right out of high school as a line technician. And after you're there for a certain number of time, they will reimburse you to go back to school.
Wow.
If you want to get your associates, if you want to get your bachelor's, master's, whatever it might be. A lot of companies do have tuition reimbursement policies. They want to invest in their employees.
Felicia, I want to thank you for joining us on A Woman's View. Your advice is amazing, amazing, amazing. And I know you're going to help a lot of people out there, especially the younger population. You are joining Priscilla Arena on A Woman's View on Long Island News Radio 103.9. View. I'm your host, Priscilla Arena, on Long Island News Radio 103.9, and we're talking with Felicia Fleitman. Let's talk a little bit about apprenticeship programs. What can you tell us about them, and how can they help?
Yeah, so an apprentice program is a federally registered program that combines school curriculum and a classroom education with on-the-job training. Traditionally, when you think of an apprentice program, you might think of the construction trade or the electrician trade, but there are many other industries that are starting to adopt apprentice programs.
Are these paid positions, or some are and some aren't, or...?
For it to be federally registered and approved by the Department of Labor, they are all paid positions. And how it works is if you get accepted into an apprentice program, you are earning a salary. It's typically several years, usually 4 or 5 years. You are earning a salary, and that salary increases as you continue to be on the job and learn more and more about the role. So traditionally, you will get accepted into a program. The program will be rigorous and also specifically structured, where you will have some of the classroom education. You'll be sent to a specific school for that, or they might come on site, and then you'll be assigned a journeyman within your specific trade, where you'll be learning directly from that person on the job. And after every, 6 months, 8 months, a year, whatever the specific milestones are within that a specific apprentice program, you'll get a raise. And then when you're done with the apprentice program and you're considered a skilled worker, hopefully you'll continue with that same company that put you through the apprentice program. That's kind of the point. But you also have a certification on your resume that is accepted by the industry as a whole. Almost like the other 4-year degree, if you will. Okay. And these are usually for trade type of positions where you really need to know quite a bit before you can actually do the job.
Okay. Some of the things when applying for a job online, are these timed tests? It's either, they want to know your social IQ, or if you're mentally stable, or, and how quickly those aptitude tests, or you can complete those aptitude tests. How important is that? And why are employers doing this? Is it because there is a disconnect where, you don't go in and put your resume down, and they're trying to figure out if you're a cuckoo bird or not? Mm-hmm. Why these aptitude tests? And if you have, let's say, for example, test anxiety, that could negatively impact you.
So most companies that I know of won't do a test at the beginning. And the test will be based on specific things. I personally am not a fan of the test. I think that they're...
Doesn't show the full capabilities.
I think they're subjective. I mean, for example, I remember this so specifically. I was working with a vodka company, actually, to place their VP of sales. And this was a several-month process, probably took about 6 months. We finally found them an amazing candidate. This candidate had all the right relationships within the industry they were looking for, had come from a different liquor company. It was just a perfect fit. And he had gone through several steps in the process and met basically the whole team. They loved him. The very last test, the very last thing to do was to take a PI test. Mm-hmm. And the company had indicated the type of personality traits that they wanted this particular candidate to have. And the candidate who took the test didn't do well on it. And they rejected him from the process. And I just thought that was crazy.
Yeah, no, that's insane.
most companies... that I know of, unless you're super, you're a huge enterprise level organization, or maybe, you know, the government or something like that, you're not going to have a test as the first step of the process. Now, let's say, for example, test anxiety. Priscilla, you and I know each other because of our work on the
ASD population.
Exactly. So,
I'm dying to get into.
Yes. But, so yeah. Employers are required to provide specific accommodations to you if you self-disclose. Now, there is...
That's very interesting. So let's say, for example, a candidate is on the spectrum, maybe mm-hmm. a high-functioning ASD individual. And clearly, I can speak from experience. Currently, like my son has testing accommodations within his district. So the same would apply literally for an employer as well.
Yeah, an employer is required to make reasonable accommodations throughout the interview process and even for the job. Where the challenge lies in your example is whether or not the candidate should disclose.
Correct.
I personally... Like, let's just talk about emotions here, right? So I personally...
Let's talk about discrimination, which we'll get into,
right,
too.
But, like, if somebody sits across from me and I don't know that they are a neurodiverse candidate or on the spectrum.
Yes.
And, you know, I'm assessing for cultural fit, right? Or right. how some companies say, I want to see if I want to have a beer with that person at the end of the day. Well, autism manifests itself as being a bit socially awkward.
Correct.
So I'm probably not going to hire that person. But if that person self-disclosed to me, then I would give them an accommodation. Even just saying like, okay, I'm not going to assess this person on cultural fit. I'm going to look for other ways to assess. And I'm going to see that this person getting to this table and sitting across from me has had to encounter so many more challenges than I have had to in my life. And so I'm going to be a bit more lenient in certain areas. That's just my own personal observation, right? I don't have any different abilities, right? As far as I know, have never been discriminated against in the interview process. Many candidates who I've spoken with who are on the spectrum or have other abilities have told me firsthand that they believe they were discriminated in the process. And so that's a risk that you run by self-disclosing. And there's a huge debate right now within the talent acquisition community that works specifically on diversity on whether or not a candidate should disclose.
I recently had a meeting with a legislator and we were sort of talking about civil service jobs.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, well, I don't know if that would necessarily work for the ASD population. Basically, you have to take a bunch of tests and it's grades and you climb up the ladder that way. I said, so basically what you're saying, you're more of a number and not a name. And she said, yes, kind of. And I said to her, I know that there needs to be some affirmative action within the civil service arena. Wouldn't the same apply for a disability?
Yeah.
And she said to me, you have a point.
My understanding actually is there are those accommodations already baked into the government. But you have to know how to get
Correct.
Around those and utilize your resources to get there. If you're on the spectrum, Access VR
yes.
is a great organization if you want a government job because they can kind of help navigate. I think Access VR, there's a Suffolk County one and a Nassau
yes.
County one. They do some great work. I think that I'm hopeful that as we continue to educate the employer community on the fact that somebody with ASD is not only just as qualified as somebody who's neurotypical, but because they're abstract thinkers, because they have the ability to focus more than their neurotypical peers.
And thrive on repetition,
that they are incredible hires at more advanced levels than somebody who can just be in a stock room or work at McDonald's. So what I'd like to see in terms of the future of hiring for ASD is more offices and more higher level positions that have neurodiverse populations. And I think we can get there.
No, I definitely agree. And you and I have had the privilege of actually sitting down with some of the head bananas, if you will, at Autism Speaks, talking about how it impacts, you know, even the country. And we've all agreed, every expert that I've sat with, that the numbers are closer to 1 in 50. I hear 1 in 44, 1 in 45. So if that is true, that's approximately 2% of the population. So if 2% of the population is on the spectrum, but yet there's a huge disparity and gap, and you have 90% or more that is underemployed or unemployed, regardless of their education. So I do think that we need to make that push. And I know you're doing that with the inclusive or strategic internship programs.
Yeah, absolutely. So the Bridges program at Adelphi University is for students who have been accepted to the university. So they've met all the minimum qualifications, gone through the same rigorous process that any other student applying to the university would go through. And they also happen to be on the autism spectrum. They do an amazing job supporting these students throughout their entire time at the university. And a piece of that is helping them find jobs. And so they've retained savvy hires to help those students find opportunities. And our job is to go into the marketplace and connect with employers and talk about why you should hire these folks and create intern programs and then support the program throughout. We have amazing partnerships with Northwell Health and Enterprise Holdings, both incredible companies, and we're continuing to have more and more. I'm really excited. I actually have a call this afternoon with another very large company on Long Island to talk about how they can be more neurodiverse. So companies are open to it. They just want that support. And they want to know how to do it, and we can help.
Right, and they need to be educated. And people who don't know out there, you know, the candidates that are on the spectrum, our conversations with the Autism at Work program gentleman from JP Morgan Chase showed a 50% increase in productivity with those individuals.
Absolutely.
And I think any company on Long Island would appreciate a 50% increase in productivity.
I know I would.
You are listening to A Woman's View with Priscilla Arena on Long Island News Radio. We're speaking with Felicia Fleitman from Savvy Hires, talking about the employment climate here on Long Island. Some of the things I'm always sort of scratching my head, and you actually brought something up before with a gentleman who was at the same position for over 20 years. Now, certainly someone in my age demographic, and I know several of my friends, I have somebody who, after 27 years with the same company, recently lost their job, and they went from a very well-paid position, you know, making close to $200,000 a year to not having a job whatsoever.
Yeah.
Do you think that there is age discrimination out there?
Yes.
Okay. All right. I mean, that was my suspicion, but I really wanted to see from your perspective.
Look, there's all discrimination out
there,
right? I mean, I think at the end of the day, everyone is a human being and they come with their own biases, right? And so that will be a piece of it. You'll either have people who are discriminating against people who are too young and not enough experience, or they don't have enough education, so they're not smart, or they come from a different town that's a lower socioeconomic background, so they lack polish, or they're too old, so there's no hunger in them. I mean, that's just your own internal biases.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, you see that throughout the hiring process. Is it legal? Of course not. Can you prove it? Really hard to.
Sometimes I think to myself, I think I was actually asked one time when I went to apply for a job in my 30s. Basically, they asked me, you know, did I plan on having any more children?
Oh, my gosh. My mom told me that when she was younger, she was a legal secretary for several years. She said that she would see ads in the paper that said mature women only.
There you go.
And she didn't think there was anything wrong with that. And I looked at her and I was like, Mom, have you ever seen an ad that said mature men only? And she looked at me. She's like, oh, okay, I get it now. I mean, what is that?
No, I know. Well, they don't want to lose you for maternity leave, I think. And
it's wild, whatever.
It's just part. Unfortunately, we're the ones who have to bear children. So, you know, if it was the other way around, it might be an even playing field, but it's not. but anyway, so with the age discrimination, are you finding more people that you're helping in their 40s and 50s, let's say, like the gentleman you were discussing before that, you know, lost their job after 20 some odd years?
Yeah, it's interesting. So Savvy Hires, our business model is companies hire us to create internship programs. That's our business model. But because I happen to be so out there in the community, because I just created recruitli.org, candidates call me all the time asking for help, and it's so hard. How do you turn somebody away who doesn't have a job and can't support their family? So I talk to a lot of people on the market, and this one gentleman comes to mind because he, you know, just like you said, had a great job selling electronics that are now obsolete into what used to be really big businesses that don't exist anymore. And so how does somebody like that reinvent their skills and their experience to get back to where they are? And what if you have gray hair? What if you're balding? What if you're, you know, whatever, you don't look the part? I think those are really, really hard things to do. There's a few suggestions I have, and nothing's perfect. Mm-hmm. So in that gentleman's case, he did every single thing he could to network and get in front of the right people, including using me and saying, hey, you know, let's meet. Please help me. And I did interview tips with him. I gave him feedback on his interviews and that type of thing. I had gotten wind of a free project management certification program that Stony Brook was offering. And I posted it on the Recruit Long Island Facebook group that he happens to be a member of. And I found out a few weeks ago that he had signed up for it. And that is somebody who's trying to figure out, who's doing whatever he can to...
Someone who's hungry.
Yeah.
Hungry and humble.
Absolutely. I think it's really hard for sales candidates specifically to, once they get fired or laid off or downsized, however you want to call it, to get back into the workforce, because so much about sales specifically is looking the part and then also having the right relationships. So if those tend to expire, it's really hard to demonstrate to a new company why you should be a fit. In my experience, when you have a strong trade or when you are a really good engineer or something along those lines, those are easier transferable skills than something that's a bit more soft skills that plays on your personality, like sales or marketing or even recruiting for that matter.
I want to talk a little bit about LinkedIn.
Yeah.
Okay. Because I think that's one of the tools you can have in your arsenal to sort of self-promote yourself or what skill sets you have and who endorses you and stuff like that. Should everybody be on LinkedIn right now? And are employers actively looking for candidates on LinkedIn?
100%.
I've been contacted myself.
So again, let's talk about technology. Yep. Let's talk about those generational differences. When I get a resume, the first thing I'm going to do is go and look at somebody's LinkedIn profile.
There you go.
Red flags are if they don't have one.
Correct.
If they only have two connections. Mm-hmm. If their profile is not built out.
How many connections are we looking? Like literally, I look at my profile and I'm funny sometimes. I won't accept every single person who sends me a request.
Right.
You know, so I might have 400 followers.
Fine. I would say people who have like 13 connections. Mm-hmm. I'm like, who is this person?
Correct.
What's going on here?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm also looking for I'm looking for a built out profile. Do I not call somebody who doesn't have a LinkedIn profile? No. I talk to everybody who I think is qualified for the job, but I'm confused as to why somebody wouldn't utilize such an incredible resource for their career. So let's talk about what should go on that LinkedIn profile. So first of all, something that every job seeker should know is that recruiters pay LinkedIn to have special search functionality where they can search for things like keyword and job title. So your LinkedIn profile should be built out with specific keywords for the job that you want. We talked about being above the fold for your resume.
It's like a constant resume.
Totally. Mm-hmm. But it could be a bit more personal. So for example, I spoke with a student recently who had just graduated and he had been a student athlete. He had no internship experience, no work experience to think of because he was playing for the minors for a Major League Baseball team. And that didn't work out for him and now he needed a job. And it was he came to me and it was I don't have this experience or I never interned and it was a negative. And I said, well, let's turn that into a positive. Let's figure out a way that you can articulate what you have done in your profile. And we created a great profile for him that spoke to employers about what he's been doing and why that makes him special, why that makes him different. And that's the same for any other candidate. Think if you're active, think about putting in the that profile like a line right below your name, something like actively seeking a marketing position on Long Island. You can go that deep if you want. Okay. And then your profile section could be nice and built out a little, while it should still be professional, it could be friendly as well. And then make sure you have all of your positions on there. It doesn't have to be as in-depth as your resume, but include those target keywords. Include that terminology that's so important to the industry that tells me that you're good at your job. And last thing, if you don't mind, Priscilla, two things actually. So with your LinkedIn profile, you can use your LinkedIn profile to get your name on the top of the pile. So if you apply for a job that you really, really want, use LinkedIn to figure out who that person applies to. Don't just send them a connection request like you said, yes, with no note,
right,
but write a note. You have up to 300 characters to convince that person to accept your invitation.
Right.
And that's how you sometimes get ahead and sometimes can just get your foot in the door. It's an opportunity to always be networking. And finally, somebody said to me recently, is it weird if I look at the interviewer's LinkedIn profile before an interview? Absolutely not. LinkedIn is a professional site. Employers expect you to look them up on LinkedIn. Sometimes what I'll do is I'll even send them a connection request and say, hey, I'm excited to interview with you. Don't look at Facebook and don't ask them about their recent vacation, but LinkedIn, go to town.
Awesome advice. And also, I would capitalize on your interests in organizations as well so they can get to know you as a person. Felicia, it's been beyond a pleasure. You know I have such respect for you and what you do. I could never do what you do, but that's why you are a guru at what you do. Thank you again for having me be a part of your world and helping the ASD population. You are listening to Priscilla Arena on A Woman's View, Long Island News Radio, 103.9.
The views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of this station, JVC Broadcasting Management, or its sponsors.